Our next speaker is Carol Adair, who is going to be speaking to us about the potential for best management practices to reduce nitrous oxide emissions.
Hi, thanks for coming and thanks for the introduction. Today I'm going to talk about a little bit of our work in the lab, looking at a few different of the experiments that we've done, looking at how different best management practices affect nitrous oxide emissions. I probably don't have to convince anybody here that we need to care about nitrous oxide emissions, and also that more than 90% of agricultural emissions of nitrous oxide would come from soil management practices. So there's a really high potential for these soil management practices to mitigate but also exacerbate nitrous oxide emissions. So at the same time, particularly in the northern part of the U.S., winter is really changing. We used to have snow cover for most of the year, cold temperatures, and a much shorter field season. Right now it's getting much longer. We have warmer winters, less snowpack, so we have more frozen soils, but also more thawing and earlier spring thaws. So one of the questions that we've been really interested in is looking at how the things we decide to do on a farm, how we decide to manage it, might interact with these warmer conditions and more freeze-thaw conditions to impact nitrous oxide emissions. So the two that I'm going to talk about today are tillage, looking at conventional reduced tillage methods, and then also no-till, and then focusing on two manure application methods, looking at broadcast, where it's just sort of sprayed across the surface, versus injection. And if you're not familiar with injection, you essentially create these little trenches using coulters, in some cases, with a little tube that goes right down into that trench and sprays the liquid manure right in there. So you've essentially got a little trench filled with manure anywhere from between 6 to 8 inches down to within a few centimeters of the surface. So given that, we pretty much expect that injection will increase nitrous oxide emissions, mainly because a lot of the emissions come from denitrification. So when you put the manure straight down into the soil, you're providing a lot of carbon, a lot of nitrogen, and you're also putting it down where there's probably anaerobic microsites already, but because the manure is liquid, you're also sort of creating more anaerobic conditions down in the soil. Secondly, I've heard a lot about tillage today, even just now, talking about, but also about how tillage impacts nitrous oxide emissions, and there's a lot of mixed results. In the experiments I'm going to talk about today, no-till has not been going on very long, so we didn't really expect to see any big changes in nitrous oxide emissions with tillage at this point anyway. So finally, there has been some more recent work looking at nitrous oxide emissions during the winter time, either during warm periods or freeze-thaw or spring melt. So we expected to see higher nitrous oxide emissions during those times. But we also expected to see management practices, in this case injection, really interact with these conditions to really boost nitrous oxide emissions. So because I'm talking about a couple different experiments here, I'm going to give you sort of our background methods. This is me sporting my sort of Laura Ingalls vibe in the field. But in general, we are going out in the field using a static chamber method. We are using a photoacoustic gas analyzer in this case. And we're going out every 2 weeks, but more frequently around the events that we're thinking will impact nitrous oxide emissions. Things like manure application, big rainfall events, or freeze-thaw dynamics, spring melt, all those sorts of things. So the first experiment I'm going to talk about is up in northern Vermont on Border View Farm, pretty much across the street from Canada, literally. And it's a factorial experiment of different tillage and manure application methods. This is a view sort of from Google Earth. So the part of the experiment I'm going to talk about today looks at two different kinds of tillage, vertical till, which is a reduced tillage method, and no-till. And then I'm only going to talk about two of the manure application methods, broadcast without incorporation and injection. So this is a continuous corn with a winter rye cover crop. We've got three replicates per manure and tillage treatment, one chamber per plot, silt loam soils, and we've got 3 years of data so far, 2015 through the present. Okay, so this is pretty much what a lot of the figures I'm going to show you will look like. Nitrous oxide emissions on the y-axis there, time on the x-axis. In this case, injection is red, broadcast is blue, And those dashed lines are when we had manure application treatments and also tillage within essentially a day or so, if tillage was applied. And the main thing you can see from this is that injection, you see a boost in nitrous oxide emissions after the application, but you really see a big boost right after injection, a much larger pulse in all three of those years. As we sort of expected, vertical tillage versus no-till really didn't have much of an impact on nitrous oxide emissions. In this case, vertical till is red, no-till is blue. We haven't seen a significant difference with nitrous oxide anyway yet. So in this case, we found, yes, injection increases nitrous oxide emissions, particularly after injection or after application, but we haven't seen any effect of tillage up till now. So the second study I'm going to talk about is part of a best management practice watershed study, and we're talking about pretty small watersheds on the scale of about 3 acres, so field scale. And I'm only going to talk about one study or one part of the study here. This is one paired watershed study looking at one little mini watershed. So the two watersheds are delineated there in blue. The one on the left is no-till plus injection. The other one is conventional plus broadcast manure. Again, this is continuous corn, no cover crop. We've got 4 or 5 chambers per watershed, 2 years of data, and again, we're on silt loam soils. So here are the data from that. The top one, again, is nitrous oxide over time. The bottom figure is soil temperature over time, over the same time period. We'll get into why we care about that in a moment. But there are a couple points I want to make here. The first is that manure application, but in particular, injection really increases nitrous oxide emissions, and particularly in the spring applications, which is what these arrows are showing you here. There is a smaller increase right after the fall application, and really the only reason that we see, I think, even that little bit of a bump is that we had incredibly warm December conditions, which you can see down on the bottom figure there. I think in past years, we've had it shut down really quickly, but here we had nitrous oxide fluxes into January, which made my graduate student really unhappy. So that's the warm winter time right there. And then we also had these really large spring thaw emissions that were much larger in the injection treatment. So even on the same order of right after application, which was kind of surprising to us. So here we've got, yes, manure injection increasing nitrous oxide emissions versus broadcast again, and also some evidence of warm wintertime and spring thaw emissions that were much larger in the injected soils. Okay, so the last experiment I'm going to talk about was an in-lab incubation looking at different types of manure application and temperature treatments. So we used frozen, went out into the field, got frozen soil cores in the middle of winter, good times, used frozen intact soil cores and did a short 8-day incubation here. We have 3 manure application methods. So here we're talking about broadcast and plowing incorporation, broadcast alone, and then injection. And we used 3 temperature treatments, a frozen one that just stayed frozen the whole time, freeze-thaw cycles that varied on 12 hours on each temperature treatment, -7 or 5 degrees Celsius, and then a thaw treatment where we just began to thaw the soil cores right at the beginning of the incubation at 5 degrees Celsius. We had 3 replicates per treatment and manure application treatment combination and measured nitrous oxide emissions on a 24-hour time step. Okay, so here are the data from that. Again, we've got nitrous oxide on the y-axis, days of the incubation on the x-axis, and here the frozen is green, pretty much always at the bottom there, really low rates of emission. Thaw is blue, and then the freeze thaw is kind of pink or red, depending on how you want to interpret that. We've got broadcast on the far side, broadcast plus plow in the middle, and then injection on the far right. And kind of 2 points here, thawing and then freeze thaw had sort of similar rates of nitrous oxide emissions, but the second main point is that the injection really had much higher, 2 to 3 times the rate of emissions of the other 2 manure application treatments. So here again, we're seeing higher nitrous oxide emissions from the injection treatment. Freeze-thaw and thaw both increased emissions, and we really saw the largest pulse from that injection treatment. So kind of summing up everything that we've talked about here, we're seeing some good evidence for nitrous oxide emissions getting increased by injection versus other ways of putting manure on fields. Very little effective tillage, at least up to this point. And then some good evidence of warm winters, freeze-thaw, and spring-thaw increasing nitrous oxide emissions, and then some evidence that how you treat your field in terms of nutrient management can really have some big impacts on these wintertime emissions. So given that winters are sort of getting warmer, it's becoming more and more important to try to figure out how microbes are responding and how their processes are responding to these conditions during the non-growing season, which is bad news for a small field season, but is really interesting. So our results are sort of suggesting that how we decide to put nutrients on our crops and our fields can really have a big impact on these non-growing season emissions. So into the future, we're looking at now kind of what the source of these wintertime emissions are, kind of who and what is responsible for them. And then also looking at whether there are things that we can do to reduce the size of these pulses, whether that's changing nutrient management or changing the timing of your nutrient application, or presence or absence of things like cover crops. And of course, there are always a lot of people to thank and that were involved in this research, so thanks to all of these folks. And with that, I can take any questions if there's time.
Yeah, there's plenty of time. You stay right on your 12 minutes.
Okay. Oh, again, the person in the back was the fastest. Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. In the Northeast, in particular, which is where all this work took place, injection is really a water quality best management practice. So we're trying to keep all the nutrients out of the waterways. So there's definitely, this is part of the trade-off. And then trying to figure out if there are things that we can do along with sort of these water quality best management practices to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions, I think, is one really good point. The other excellent point is that, yeah, there's a lot of probably ammonia loss with just broadcast without incorporation. We're working on characterizing that as well, and there are some people at Penn State who have done a nice job characterizing that within like 24 hours.
Actually, that was me.
Oh, is that you?
Yeah.
Excellent. yeah, we should talk. But so we don't have that data on hand, but I expect that as they found that happened. We have seen increases in nutrient content in the crops with injection as well. So, like you say, there are definitely trade-offs that need to be kind of weighed and balanced. Well, they do try to cover it. Like, if you remember that picture, they usually have like a chisel that comes along, and then they have some discs that attempt to close that gap. And I think it the effectiveness with which that happens probably is an important variable. I would say it's moderately successful in the studies that I've been looking at. The lab, we didn't actually inject it. We just took it from the fields in the lab experiment. So we didn't add it. It was just what had been done in the field already. But that's an excellent point.